Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Legacy of Violence, A History of the British Empire by Caroline Elkins examines how the British Empire expanded and governed through recurring reliance on coercion, emergency rule, and punitive force. Drawing on widely discussed archival research and the author's established scholarship on colonial detention and counterinsurgency, the book traces patterns that appeared across different regions and time periods, from early conquest to late imperial crisis. Elkins focuses not only on battlefield violence, but also on the legal, bureaucratic, and ideological systems that normalize repression while maintaining a self-image of liberal governance. The narrative connects high-level policy decisions in London to realities on the ground, showing how officials, soldiers, and administrators used law, policing, and intelligence to manage subject populations. Rather than presenting empire as a uniform project, the book highlights variations across colonies, while arguing that certain tools of control repeatedly resurfaced. It invites readers to reconsider familiar stories of imperial progress by foregrounding the human and political costs of imperial rule. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, violence as an imperial system, not an exception. A central topic is the argument that violence in the British Empire functioned as a governing system rather than as isolated misconduct. The book frames coercion as something embedded in institutions, the army and police, colonial administrations, intelligence services, and courts that could be redesigned to serve security objectives. Instead of treating brutality as a deviation from a liberal imperial ideal, Elkins emphasizes the recurring ways authorities used force to make conquest durable and to discipline resistance. This includes direct punitive expeditions and massacres, but also quieter forms of coercion such as collective punishment, forced displacement, destruction of property, and the regulation of movement and labor. The narrative also pays attention to how official language and paperwork could turn violence into procedure, making harsh measures appear like routine administration. By showing how similar approaches reappeared across distant territories, the book encourages readers to see imperial violence as reproducible and transferable, shaped by doctrine, precedent, and professional networks. This systemic view helps explain why abuses could persist across decades, even when metropolitan rhetoric celebrated rule of law and gradual reform. Secondly, law, emergency powers, and the bureaucratization of repression. Another major theme is the role of law and administration in legitimizing coercion. The book explores how colonial governments employed emergency regulations, special courts, and expansive police powers to manage unrest while preserving an image of legality. Such measures often allowed detention without trial, censorship, restrictions on assembly, and wide discretion for security forces. Elkins highlights the paradox of liberal empire officials could claim adherence to due process while designing legal structures that suspended ordinary protections for colonized people. The administrative side matters because it shows how repression was organized, recorded, and defended through reports, memoranda, and chains of command. This emphasis on bureaucracy also illuminates accountability gaps, where responsibility could be diffused across offices and committees. The book connects these tools to broader imperial governance, suggesting that emergency rule was not a rare last resort, but a repeatedly used method for controlling populations and extracting compliance. Readers come away with a clearer understanding of how the machinery of paperwork, regulations, and institutional routines can enable violence while shielding decision-makers from scrutiny and reducing the political cost of harsh policies. Thirdly, counterinsurgency, detention, and the management of dissent. Elkins places significant focus on how the empire responded to anti-colonial movements, particularly in the 20th century when demands for self-rule intensified. The book examines counterinsurgency as a blend of military action and population control, where intelligence gathering, surveillance, informant systems, and psychological operations combined with collective punishments and mass detention. Detention camps, screening processes, and interrogation practices become key lenses for understanding how the state sought to separate insurgents from civilian communities and to break political organizations. The account links these practices to broader strategies of control, including resettlement schemes and restrictions on everyday life that could reshape social and economic relations. By presenting counterinsurgency as a learned and exported set of techniques, the book suggests that experiences in one colony influence responses in another, creating a repertoire of methods that officials could deploy during crises. This topic also underscores the human consequences of such policies: disrupted families, long-term trauma, and deep political resentment that complicated post-colonial transitions. It helps readers see decolonization not only as a diplomatic or constitutional process, but as a conflict shaped by security doctrine and coercive institutions. Fourthly, imperial ideology, racial hierarchy, and moral justification. The book also interrogates the ideas that made imperial violence seem permissible or necessary to those who carried it out. Elkins emphasizes how racial hierarchy and civilizing narratives could frame colonized populations as inherently disorderly or dangerous, thereby justifying exceptional force. This ideological layer mattered at every level, from popular culture and press coverage to official correspondence and policy debates. The empire could represent itself as a bearer of progress, law, and modernization, while simultaneously denying equal rights and political voice to subject peoples. The book explores how such contradictions were managed through moral argument, selective reporting, and the portrayal of resistance as criminality rather than politics. By tracing the interplay between ideology and practice, Elkins shows how violence was not simply a reaction to events on the ground, but was supported by assumptions about who deserved protection and who could be coerced. Understanding this topic clarifies why reforms were often partial and why accountability could be avoided if certain groups were seen as outside the moral community. Harsh treatment could be rationalized as restoration of order. The analysis invites readers to reflect on how narratives of benevolent power can coexist with systematic harm. Lastly, after lives of empire and the persistence of imperial logics, a final important topic is what remains after formal empire ends. The book considers how the legacies of imperial governance can persist in institutions, political culture, and public memory. Elkins links the end of colonial rule to struggles over historical responsibility, including what gets documented, what gets hidden, and how states respond to claims of abuse. The handling of archives, official inquiries, and reputational concerns becomes part of the story, illustrating how histories of violence can be minimized or reframed to protect national self-understanding. The book also suggests that certain governing habits, such as reliance on emergency powers and security-first approaches to dissent, may echo beyond colonial settings, influencing later state practices and debates about rights. This topic encourages readers to view empire as a formative experience that shaped modern governance, not merely a distant chapter. It also highlights why historical reckoning matters without confronting how coercion operated. Societies may struggle to understand present inequalities, migration, and diaspora dynamics, and political distrust rooted in colonial experience. The Afterlives theme broadens the book from a historical account into a discussion of memory, accountability, and the long shadow of imperial rule. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want a serious, research-driven history of the British Empire that foregrounds power, coercion, and the realities of colonial rule. Students and general readers interested in imperial history, decolonization, human rights, legal history, and political violence will find it especially relevant, as will anyone trying to understand why debates about empire remain politically charged today. Its practical benefit is clarity. It helps readers recognize how institutions can normalize extraordinary force through policy, procedure, and narratives of necessity. Or, that understanding sharpens the ability to evaluate modern claims about security, emergency powers, and state legitimacy. And it deepens empathy for communities shaped by colonial governance and its aftermath. Compared to many broad surveys that emphasize trade, administration, or high politics, Elkins places repression and resistance at the center and connects events across regions to highlight recurring methods of control. The result feels less like a celebratory overview and more like an integrated analysis of how empire functioned when challenged. For buyers choosing among imperial histories, this book stands out for its focus on systems of violence, its attention to legal and bureaucratic mechanisms, and its insistence on confronting the ethical costs embedded in imperial statecraft. If you would like to support Caroline Elkins, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.